Hi everyone, and welcome to the Cover Mindset podcast with McGinley Coaching. I'm your host and founder, Laurie McGinley. Today we're joined by Rob Atkin. How are you, Rob?
I'm fine, Laurie. We've had a bit of rain here, but the sunshine should be coming back tomorrow. So hopefully get back out on the pitches and we'll be okay. So fingers crossed.
To be fair, it was a monsoon the last 4 hours, so I'm quite happy to be inside doing some work. But that's the British weather for us. But can you just tell the listeners a wee background about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep it brief because we'd be here forever. Just being fanatical about football from the age of 9 and growing up in Newcastle upon Tyne, whether you like it or not, you become a Newcastle supporter. And my generation, we were out playing every day on the school fields, even in the summer holidays. We didn't go on holiday, we played football every day with my mates. And even at school, it was football all the way. We were just totally nothing else to do. So we got our 10,000 hours by the time we were about 16. And it was interesting because when you asked me the questions that we might be talking about, I started really reflecting back. And when I think about it, I was always the organiser and I was captain of the teams. So moving into coaching was just a natural progression and people were quite happy for that to happen. And once we got into open age football, I was playing with three teams on a weekend, Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. And that's probably the reason I've had both my hips replaced. I've got two plastic ones. But just, that was our life. My first full strip, I don't know if this might be nice or not nice for you, was the Celtic one when they won a European Cup.
Nah, okay, no comment.
I thought...
And you've been working in football kind of for a long time, you know, and we discussed, you know, beforehand. But what's the kind of being highlights, you know, personally and professionally?
I think when you start off, you've got all your testosterone, you've got your coaching badges, and you're going to take over the world, this, that, to that, and you're going to get the highest qualification which you can get. But looking back now, it was seeing others develop to their full potential. Now, that would be either as players going in the professional game or as coaches, and it's special. Managing and coaching adult teams to success is something that's very satisfying and creating the memories and friendships for a lifetime. But when looking back, that was hard work, 24/7. As you know, the phone never stops and you're always thinking of the players you're bringing in and the next team you're going to play against. Fast forward, moving into coach education and being an FA mentor was another natural progression, and it was a great experience because you got to help coaches and help them reflect on why they coach and how players develop game understanding via the different coaching styles. We took a coaching badge, it's the FA prelim. It was all out on the field, it was a little bit of paperwork, but you didn't get a lot of support. You just had to hit the levels from the off, and the game has moved on a hell of a lot. Some good, some bad, but it was just great to help. The amount of football teams in this area, there's a lack of coaches, so it's dads and mums who, if they don't take it on, nobody else will. So you get the chance to support them and a little bit of guiding them on what their philosophy should look like in youth development, as opposed to the only reference point is the FA Premier League or the Scottish leagues and Monday Night Football, and they think that's how they've got to behave. So that was really a great way to finish towards the end of a 40-year career.
Yeah, because we talked beforehand about like the council job you had like in for Newcastle, you know, and yes. What did this kind of entail? Because that will lead on to the kind of the Newcastle ladies later on. But this was obviously a huge job. You were saying there was so many different things you had to deal with, but also there was some problems you had to deal with too. How do you try and keep that the motivation when things go right and when things go wrong?
I mean, it was a golden era, and I think we were pioneers. The Football Association, probably on the back of the hooligan problem, they'd followed England around and lots of other clubs and what have you, started football development schemes. And this was mid to late 80s, so in the big industrial areas, so Newcastle upon Tyne, Bradford was the first football development scheme, Cheshire, London, Manchester, you name it. And I think they probably had the same up in Scotland with the coach, the Sevens that he set up. So it was really getting at the grassroots and affecting the kids of the future and affecting the parents as well. So the football development scheme kicked off 1987. I was very fortunate to get a role there as a self-employed coach. But within 1 year, and something else we've talked about, I got a full-time job. So it was pensions, it was everything. And it was cast iron because the city council, if you're doing your job, you're okay. You've got the unions and everybody behind you and this, that, and the other. But we were out at a bit of limb. We had our own facilities, so we just were allowed to get on with things. It was a blank piece of paper. So that was fantastic. So we started off coaching centres. We're then trying to work with coaches and get enough coaches. And it got to the stage where we were coaching 25,000 kids per year, attendances, so it would be the same kids coming back. A lot of them, and it was all new, to see a coach with a bag of balls for one player to use, you know, each time was unseen. I mean, I came through lots of football processes, but mainly it was run around the pitch and jump on and then off you go. You never see the ball. So the football development scheme, very, very successful, and that went for 22 years, and then I got headhunted by Newcastle United Foundation. But it was the amount of coaches that we brought through as well, who all went on to achieve lots and lots of success in their personal life. But it got to a state where it was starting to hit a bit of a glass ceiling. I mean, this was before 3G and floodlights, so throughout the winter you're working indoors. But it was all on technical stuff, and this was new to this country. Before your time, Laurie, you'll not remember the Coca-Cola soccer tests and skills, and you're learning Cruyff turns and stepovers and getting back to more so, definitely Scotland, all them clever little dribblers and tanner ball players who just wanted to be on the ball, you know, the likes of Willie Johnson and John Collins and all these people. It had lost that. And I'll allude to something later on when I started taking my coaching badges. So it was all real good quality. But the main drawback was facilities. There just wasn't enough. And our summers don't last very long, even though that was real good fun doing soccer weeks throughout the 6 weeks summer holidays. But as I've said, the indoors we used throughout the winter, but that put a bit of a glass ceiling on for kids coming in from the age of five. So it was great, and we got to meet other people throughout the country, go to CPD events and learn so much, and then see these people later on managing England and stuff like that. It was a real good positive thing. And before YouTube and DVDs, and you had to get out on the field, you had to get out there and learn the tricks and turns and this and that.
Yes. And you talked about, you know, you're headhunted by the kind of foundation, but the biggest part was probably the Newcastle ladies job, and you're there for quite a while. What was the kind of, what was your role, and why did you take the job? Because in all, women's football is obviously getting bigger and bigger, but it might not have been as big when you started it, but it's obviously you have to learn, you have to deal with the why, how to deal with the facilities, how to deal with maybe people who might not think that women's football is, you know, the right thing to do.
Oh yeah, I mean, like you said, we've more or less done everything. And when people say to me now, oh, we're going to try this, I can say it. We tried that 30 years ago and it doesn't really work. Just basic things, you know, when they're trying to set things up. And we covered everything. I mean, I was coach educator, I was delivering level twos, UEFA Bs, and I was delivering this UEFA B, the full week practical element. And it was a couple of the girls on from Newcastle Women's Football Club who I knew from a distance and were mad keen, you know, footballers and stuff like that. So the millennium lands, and we're sitting over staff meetings, right, what have we not really done? What have we not really got the teeth to do? Then we talk about girls' football at the youngest ages. That was unheard of. Just wasn't there. There wasn't an element of young girls walking around with football strips on. It just never happened, where now everybody's got a football strip for their daughters and their granddaughters. So we decided to get involved. We started the girls' first mini soccer centre. We had about 12 turn up. Three of them turned up who were decent athletes, and the rest turned up because their mates were there. And that's okay, because that's a big difference in the boys' and the girls' game. So that built up and built up and built up, and we started to have the girls' only specific programmes, working on an advanced programme that eventually became a Girls' Centre of Excellence under the umbrella of Newcastle Women's. But anyway, I've just moved on a bit there too quick. So at the end of this week, on the UFRB, one of the girls said, Rob, do you fancy coming doing a session with the senior women's team? And me being me, couldn't say no. And then afterwards I went, what have I let myself in for? But cut long story short, I knew what I was going to do, like shelling peas. I'll go along, I'll have 16 footballs, so that'll impress them to start with. Gets along, lovely, lovely bunch of people, various ages. You had some of the older ones who were playing for the team but had came from hockey or netball, never been coached as footballers, but had been decent sports people. So a load of individual ball work, tagged, stuck in the mud, great fun. And that allowed me just to look at them and to really evaluate where they were technically. And some of them could not control the ball. It was totally alien to them. They'd played in games, they'd had some success by just whacking it up the other end of the pitch. And that's okay at times, but this was like an eye-opener for me. So had great fun, loads of humour, which I like to bring in. And then we'd done some overload possession games, three colours, which was like rocket science to them. So they didn't know whose team they were on or where they were supposed to pass it. So it was good, and I just made the environment very friendly, so it wasn't them on trail or whatever. And then we finished with probably an 8-8 condition game to try and get them to control the ball and pass it, as opposed to just welling off the pitch. And I'll never forget, they were just sponges. And like the boys or men's, you know, you were there and it was like they were doing you a favour sometimes. And that's the way you deal with them. And at the end of the session, the girl who invited me along said, you're going to have to come back next week. I said, well, what for? And I knew that I wanted to go back the following week. I said, she said, they ain't going to put up with us anymore after what you've done tonight. Now, they've probably done what we've done in men's teams where people turn up, they run around the pitch, they try and make them sick. And then if they're lucky, they get a game and somebody is shouting balls at you. A bit like we've talked about, where people just concentrate on the physical aspect of the athlete instead of thinking, well, does it relate to the game? So, cut long story short, and then that was me for the next 10 years. And I thought, right, this is brilliant. I even stepped down from Newcastle United's academy, spoke to Alan Irvine and said, look, this is what I'm going to do. And Alan's a lovely fella, great coach. I just got on with it, and I knew I could make a real go of it because my job, it was a full-time job, so it wasn't a hobby, and I had to, you know, show the city council this was serious stuff. And women in sport, again, was in its infancy. So we ended up with 40 players, three teams, reserve team and a development team of the young kids coming through, and we got lots of success over 10 years. And I can easily say it was probably one of the best times I've enjoyed coaching, because you were making a big difference. And for the club to get a UEFA A coach was unheard of. And some of the people were looking at me and thinking I'd lost my marbles, but we got lots of success. And you knew how you wanted to set up, you know, your philosophy. And some of them girls that were in that first session, they were probably there until the end of the season. And slowly, they were replaced by other people who were better athletes and technically better. I mean, that in those days, girls could play an open age football age 14, and I had two or three who were very good players, technically, and very good athletes, so fast. And the goalkeeper was only 14. She was 6 foot. So it was a total change of the image of what women's football looked like. And we always got a little bit of success, might get to a cup final. Then the whole aim was to get out of the league they were in. And it, unfortunately, there's only one team goes up. So that was the battle. And then get into the women's top divisions and be playing in the FA Cup. But it was a great... I would say to everybody, have a real go. You'll get your eyes opened up and it'll improve you as a coach, because your skill sets have to change. And I had a captain who was a great ally to me, who would tell me anything that was going on, why. I mean, I was doing a session one night, three colour possession, which I love doing. Kelly Ridley, brilliant player. Not the pass to somebody in the same colour bib, 6 yards away, and then hits a worldie, goes off the other end of the pitch. I said, Kelly, just keep the ball. And then the captain told me later, oh, them two aren't speaking. And I went, aye, aye. So you're going into a totally different environment as opposed to men's football, and they have a problem, they leave it off the pitch, and then they just get on and play as per normal. So you were dealing with lots of egos and lots of personalities, and had to be totally different. I suppose it's what you call modern coaching now. You had to work with the duels, you had to get to know them, and really look after them. You just had to change. You had to change totally how you dealt with the new group of players who were females.
You talk about coaching philosophy. What was your coaching philosophy? Because you said, it's so interesting, because you get approached by a lot of...
So basically, I was fortunate enough to grow up, as I've said, and watch players either live at Newcastle United or on TV who were real top players, and they were all very expressive, they all loved to dribble, whether it was George Best or Jimmy Johnson, as we've alluded to, or later on, Chris Waddle, Paul Gascoigne. Now, when I started my coaching badge, I went for my full licence. It was at the time of direct player. So this is before your time, Laurie. And it was basically, we will show you how to play the game of football. It'll get out of the full-back. They'll welly it forward. The big fella will fight for it. And the little fella will get round him. So like Toshack and Keegan. And I'm thinking, I'm not really sure I'm buying into this. Because I used to play and I would pretend to be bloody Glenn Hoddle. I was pinging balls to feet and getting them back and this, that and the other. So my philosophy never wavered. So I was glad about that, because that's the way I played. Even if I played fullback, I'd want to get the ball and play out. So you get through your badge. You've got your badge. It's a bit like a driving licence. When you get a driving licence, you can drive anywhere you want. Nobody's going to stop you. So I think, going back to what you said, I think technique is the basis of everything. Remember Ruud Gullit working in Newcastle United for a short time, and he would talk about defining moments. In any game, there'll be one defining moment that will change that game, win it or lose it. And it's basically down to technique. And I'm a great believer in my generation. Had nothing else to do but play football, so we'd be out and we'd be practising anything we'd seen. Whether it was playing a ball off the curb and it come back and you control it. That doesn't happen now. Everything's organised by adults. Even centres of excellence players, they might be there 2 nights a week and a Sunday, but we were out every day. We had nothing else to do. We just loved practising. And if you've seen a player, whether it was a guy called Jeff Allen at Newcastle who was left-footed, I was out the next day practising me left foot and pretend to go inside and on the outside like Eddie Gray or John Barnes. And I think that was innate. So my philosophy has always been, the game is a great teacher. And this last few years, even more so. You've got 6 or 7 year old kids that want to be in teams. Their parents want them in teams. And I just play 3v3s, 4v4s, without goalkeepers. I was fortunate enough to to meet some people from Holland, the Ajax coaches, and that's all they did. They didn't have goalkeepers. They didn't have goalkeepers till under 12. So Van der Sar, Tim Krul, I'm trying to think of the other fella, all very good with their feet because they were outfield players until they were 12. Now, in this country, it would be the same up Scotland. The little fat kid got put in goal. Simple as that. You know, that was the way it was. So you couldn't dare play out from the back. You wouldn't dare pass the ball back to them to deal with. And that was my philosophy regarding the total football bit. I've seen a lot through my mentoring over coaching, and I've worked with some coaches and changed their belief set. That last 10 minutes in your 1 hour session is not a reward to give them a game. And we then get taught about hold, part, hold. Start with a game, come out, polish something up, go back into the game and see if it's even made a difference. But kids want to play. You know, any game, whether you play darts, snooker, anything, you have to play the game and it will improve you and you'll learn by mistakes.
Yeah.
But that, for me, that's the thing. It's about playing the game, having fun and really being enthusiastic about the sport that you want to do. So if I was to put my philosophy in one thing, it would be that. Just play the game. And I remember a top coach, Jack Detchen, no longer with us, and said to all the coaches there who were trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel and split the atom, if you're not sure, just have a game. Because they'll love you for it and they'll be back the next week. So that's one of the things for me. And having played, I know what it's like to play. I'll take so much information and after that I'm switching off.
Yeah. Because I was speaking to the Birmingham women's goalkeeping coach Tony Elliott, and he talked about the detail, and it's important how important it is in the women's game, the detail, the why. But if you could help the session plan, and things go wrong in session plans, but if you have the detail and the knowledge, you know, to adapt. Yes. See, when you're working with younger players, they obviously, you talked about play, but sometimes you have to actually break the skill down to make it easier for them. So therefore, the younger ones, and it, you know as well as I do, in the women's game, is the why is probably the most important. But if you can explain it, and if it doesn't go right away, you have to maybe do it two or three different ways, but the detail is getting more and more, so therefore they'll understand it, and there's more of positive. See, when you're designing, you were designing kind of session plans when working at a kind of first team level, and you're working with a variety of players. See the when you're breaking the skill down, was it good having older players who are technically good, so therefore they teach the younger ones more, so therefore you have you've got leaders and you've got coaching, and therefore you can actually have more time developing the team.
Definitely, I think you're right, but it's that attention to detail. And I remember going down to Wales to a coaching seminar, as I've said, this is before DVDs and all this palaver, and there's a guy called John Cartwright, very famous FA coach, little fellow with the FA, he worked at Crystal Palace, and he was doing something called New Age Shooting. I thought, well, what can this be? And just, you know, shooting, technique of shooting. And I still talk about it this day, and I watch games on TV. If you go to strike the ball with your right foot, and you land on your right foot, it's nigh on impossible to put the ball over the bar. And now when I see games, even in games on TV, even in the Women's World Cup, when players strike the ball with their right foot and they land on the right foot, and it's not an easy thing, but you can go and practice it, the ball just dips at the last second. For some reason, it dips. There's a great example of Di Matteo against Middlesbrough in a League Cup final, and he runs with the ball and then he just hits it and he lands. It's with his right foot, lands on his right foot, and it just dips. So there's attention to detail like that. They're golden nuggets. You have to go and watch and listen to these people and go, wow. And that, I think that's missing from the coaching courses now, and certainly the enthusiasm of coaches who they'll do an online level one and they think that Jose Mourinho and they're going to go all the way. And you can't even feel a level three anymore. You've just got to turn up, pay your money. So the hunger for that detail, of technical detail and whether it's goalkeeping or being a centre half and this, that and the other. And I think we've lost a lot of that. It used to be great on TV, the boot room with Andy Gray and people like that would just say something of, I was trying to remember who was, maybe Pallister playing with Man United against, was it Romario? Romario just kept stepping off behind him and it took his mind off the ball. And he'd suddenly jump on side and he was in behind. And there was things that, watching Chris Waddle, who came to Chef Wed when I worked there, and he'd been at Marseille, it was like, yeah, give us the ball. They can man mark me, then put two on me, and I'll beat both of them, and I'll get a cross in. And this bloke, he wasn't fast. He just could change direction and bring other people into play. They just have this understanding. So your technique, your physical, your social, and your psychological are the things that we need to get kids to understand and talk to them about it and say, okay, well, what could you do differently there? Well, I could have played it to him. Yeah, that might have been a better option because you ain't going to dribble into your own goalpost, are you really? And that it's just helping them, but not just commanding them to do stuff. But again, when you work with a group of players, it depends how serious it is. If you're in the Northern League, which I've been, or Northumberland County under-18s, FA County Youth Cup, trying to beat the whole of the country, you have to find a way to win. But you have to sell it to the players, and you have to select the players that carry out your ideas of how you're going to win. And playing in a four group to kick off with, draws are no good. You have to go and win games, and you have to have an idea that you might have to change and play differently the last 20 minutes and go 3-4-3 or whatever, you know. And that's where you get your experience as a coach, and that's a bit, I really love that, the challenges.
Yeah, because that's the kind of last two questions on kind of mindset and improving your CBD. So kind of, you talked about going to courses and networking. Is that something that you've learned over the last, it was 40 years? Of what's the best advice you'd probably give to a kind of younger coach or a person who's maybe in the game that's maybe hit a glass ceiling, but they want to improve their CBD? Like, how, what do you think, like, even for free or putting a wee bit of money behind, what do you think is the kind of best thing to do for maybe younger, as I say, young coaches?
You've got to go and live alongside these people. And most people are very nice. I remember Ericsson, who was the England manager, as a young guy in Sweden, he sent a letter to Bobby Robson, can I come over to Ipswich, because Ipswich are doing really well. And everybody welcomes you in. Yeah. I've sat in the same room as Alex Ferguson and Steve McLaren and all those people. We came up to Glasgow Rangers, this might be his style, with what was AFCAT, the Association of Football Coaches and Teachers, which was all Adidas driven, so it was a slant behind it, and the Dutch coaches were over and we were all up there, and it was like, wow, just opening your mind to a different culture where they played, the ball never left the floor, nobody tackled really, they just tried to intercept, and then you watch them and then you see the Dutch players coming to play at Arsenal and the overloads to bring all the back four across, then quickly switch it in the middle for Henri or whoever to put it in the net. And it's like, that tested you with your coaching. And what happens is you start to just develop your own sessions and you know what works and you know what the players need. So it's not boring, but it's not too complex that they can't do it. But I'm a great one for fun condition games and stuff. That, but it has to look like the game. There was some guy put something in the WhatsApp group that we met in, and has anybody got any sessions for a goalkeeper? And I'm at the age where, you know, I'll say it as I speak, you know, and I'll speak as I see it and hear it, and I said, well, have you spoken to your goalkeeper and asked him what he needs? Because the goalkeeper will say, what he wants to do with you today, I'll just take shots. Well, I'm sorry, but 97 shots from the penalty spot into your hands is not the game of football. What do you not like doing? Well, I don't like them crosses that come whizzing across the six-yard box. I don't like having to come and communicate with my centre-half. Or I struggle to deal with a back pass. So, okay then, well, let's work on that. And I think that's where we have to open the minds of individual players to be open and honest with themselves. So it's a never-ending thing. And there's nothing new. We've got fancy pitches, we've got 3G, we've got Sky TV, but most goals are scored in five passes or less. Going back to the Charles Hughes book, most of them will be one-touch finish, you know? And the game is fantastic. VARs getting a little bit of criticism, taking away some of the romance, but nothing has really changed. And when you play and you know you can make a pass or you've scored a goal, there's that feeling that you know what it's like. And I think some coaches retire age 19 and you think, well, you don't play anymore. Oh, no, I don't play anymore. But you're only 19. My last game was age 50 in goal on St James's Park at the end of the season when they rent the pitches out.
Yeah.
You know? So you play as long as you can.
Yeah.
And once you get your coaching badge, you still become a better player. Because you realise I've spent all my formative years trying to beat everybody and look clever, well, just pass it. Michael Carrick, who was on our courses, age 9, just looked like an athlete. And you look at Michael Carrick, look at Roy Keane, they just don't give the ball away. They're not trying to be clever. They'll just keep that ball moving. And there's a place in the game for that.
Yeah.
Eventually, once the kids hit 9, 9, they tend to find they've got a couple of positions. Prior to that, just play any way you want, move them around. Yeah, you're a turning goal as well. I mean, the amount of dads who, oh, I don't want my son playing goal. I says, well, he wants to play in goal and it's not your game and he's pretty good. You know, he's a good outfield player. So it's changing those mentalities as well.
Yeah, and 60 seconds to sum up your mindset. What would you say your mindset is?
Right, well, took all my coaching badges, done loads of sessions, and I felt I was hitting a brick wall. And then I took a diploma in sports psychology, and having spent lots of time with Steve McLaren and people like that at Man United, a positive mindset, it's hard work, but they're key ingredients to performance. And in all walks of life, I listen to audio books, there may be Barack Obama, whoever, maybe a lot of sports people, but they have a winning and they keep growing their mindset. They do never stop. They're always looking for the next best thing. Johnny Wilkinson's a prime example. Ronaldo never gave up in his prime, you know. So I think that's what we've got to get through to people. There's no shortcuts. There's a book out there that talks about 10,000 hours. And to be honest, they're not far wrong. It won't make you elite. But if you're not prepared to chuck 10,000 hours at anything, I think you're just playing at it.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you again, Rob.
Brilliant.